for another episode.
Welcome. We're welcoming you back into our home, our podcast studio home. This is The Pursuit of Perfectness, your very favorite podcast in the world, about perfectionism and the ways in which we deal with it. We yes. talked to lots of interesting folks and talked to them about how perfectionism appears in their work, and that's what we do. We got to tighten up this intro.
We're never going to do it. My name is Ellen Matthews. I'm a co-host of this podcast, and over there is...
My name is Dennis Pacheco, and I'm the other co-host of this podcast. And we are both improvisers in New York City and just a couple of regular Joes trying to get through the day, just like you.
Get through the day. Also self-proclaimed perfectionists, very hard on ourselves, very rigid in our thinking, and we're trying to get better. And I think we are getting better, Dennis.
I think we are.
I think so.
Yeah, I think this podcast helps. I think still going to therapy. This podcast is not a replacement for therapy. That's
folks.
The disclaimer. That's the disclaimer on the side of the bottle that this podcast comes in. This podcast is not a replacement for therapy, but it's a fun time. You got to agree with that, right?
It's a lot of fun.
Folks, we got a great guest for you today. Our guest is Jerry Cole, multiple award-winning writer on Sesame Street. She hosts a podcast. It's called On Writing from the Writers Guild of America East. Ellen, I know you've got all this information. Can you?
Yeah, because we got to expand on these awards because it's just so impressive. Jerry has 4 Emmys, 3 for writing and 1 for producing. Also a Writers Guild Award, a Producers Guild Award, and an NAACP Image Award. Just fantastic accolades. We're super, super fortunate to be talking to Jerry.
Yeah, and we had a great time talking to Jerry about writing. It's hard. about creating stuff with your partner.
And how to be the perfect couple. We also talk about that. Jerry and her partner have some sketches, a little how-to, so that you can be in a perfect partnership as well.
Yeah, this one's got it all, folks. If this one don't got it, you don't want it. You paid for the whole seat, but you're only going to use the edge.
We got to tighten up this inner part, too.
Yeah, we probably kind of got to tighten up the whole thing.
Folks, we got to tighten up the concept.
Yeah, it's never been entirely clear to me. Well, without further ado, here's our conversation with Jerry Cole. What are some of your favorite things that you've written for Sesame Street? Like, you have any fond memories of anything being like, oh man, I made Elmo fart. That's amazing.
I mean, I wish I could make Elmo fart, actually. I mean, it's tricky, you know, like, obviously I feel very honored to get to write for historical show like Sesame Street and the amazing performers and characters that, were created. But it is also tricky because it, in a way, it always feels like, you know, nothing is ever mine. You know, it's like and I think everybody who works there honestly feels that way because it is such an institution and the legacy of the characters that it always feels like you're just sort of like a steward and not an author, you know?
Right.
And so that can feel tricky sometimes, but, I mean, there's tons of actually, I do have a favorite thing that I've written, which probably got cut out now that I think about it.
Oh, no.
Because I don't know that I saw, I don't know that I've seen the final. But I remember there's a segment that we do called Cookie Monster's Foodie Truck. First of all, Cookie Monster's my favorite character, obviously. Hello.
Great.
I mean, there's a lot of really amazing characters. I was like, Cookie Monster's clearly everyone's favorite. So there's this segment that we do called Cookie Monster's Foodie Truck where he's like in a foodie truck and making snacks for people on Sesame Street. It's like a Where Does Your Food Come From segment, which is, it's a really great segment because then they will do a short film of tomatoes are grown, blah, 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 like that kind of deal. And there was one I did on chickpeas. Was it chickpea? Yeah, I think it was chickpea because then I had written that Cookie Monster was like being confused and like trying to find chickpeas, and he finds like a little baby chick and a pea. And he's like, this is the chickpea, right? And they're like, no, 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 no. And then they go to, you know, again, they go through the whole episode of like finding the chickpeas and like where they grow and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, I had written, I'd written that Cookie Monster. So then they always make the snack. And at the end of the segment, after they've made the snack and given it to their friend, Gonger, who's the other character in the segment, the like chef character, will always give Cookie Monster a little piece of the treat to be like, here, this is nice for you. And in this one, I wrote that Cookie Monster gives it to the chick and is like, this is here. I want to give it to my son, Chicardo. I'm sure it got cut out, but I was like, Cookie Monster's adopted this chick and named him Chicardo. And I really hope they keep this joke in.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm sure they didn't, but yeah.
You know, it's so like, I would enjoy that like scene as an adult. Like, do you ever do you ever write it knowing that like, oh, parents and guardians like are also watching this with their kids? Yeah.
1,000%. Everything we try to in theory create is written on two levels. It's written for kids to understand and then also for parents to enjoy, because, you know, Sesame's whole thing is like co-watching. When you co-watch with kids and families, when parents and kids watch together, the learning is greater. And so trying to make things, that's what like all the like parody segments were about, where it's like trying to get the parents to watch it with the kids.
Yeah.
So there's always tons of jokes in there for parents. It's tough because sometimes curriculum can get very, it's a very tough balance of trying to put that show together, because curriculum is famous for always wanting to cut out jokes, and it's like, oh, come on. They're like, oh, kids, this might confuse the kid. It's like, I don't care if it confuses the kid. It's funny.
Some of those hip kids that are with it will dig it.
Yeah, they'll appreciate it.
I just remember watching Sesame Street and starting to see like, oh, this is a parody of this movie that kids have no idea of, but they just changed a lot of the specifics. And, you know, and then the content is kid friendly, but like the movie is like My Dinner with Andre or something like that. So like, kids don't.
Yeah. I mean, like, we did a Game of Thrones parody. It's like, clearly kids don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. I was interested in what you said about curriculum. I guess I never really thought of, you know, everything that goes into writing a show. So is there like a curriculum department that's like, here are the educational aspects, and then you as the writer take that and kind of mold it into something? Like, could you talk a little bit about that process? That's really interesting.
Sure. Yeah. I think it used to be unique to Sesame. I don't know if other kids' shows do it now. Or actually some other shows. In fact, I was talking to the writer of The Daily Show, and I feel like they have a similar process, honestly, where it was like, you're given a ton of research and you have to like make it palatable and digestible and funny. So yeah, we have a huge curriculum. We have a curriculum and research department. So curriculum designs like what, you know, it sort of, when I first started working at Sesame, it would sort of change every year. And then it was kind of always like whole child curriculum. Like, there's always a whole child curriculum where it's like you can hit certain things and that's good. But they do always try and focus it every season to something specific. Last season, or the season we're currently shooting now and next season, are focusing on racial justice. But then like previous seasons have been like kindness and or cultivating cultural competencies, which everyone always had a hard time getting out. Every season starts with a curriculum meeting that's sometimes a couple days long, where they get a panel of experts. The curriculum department has gathered a panel of experts to say, this is the topic we want to address. How can we? And so it'll be experts either in that field and or child development experts and or ideally both, you know. And so then that panel will sit down and talk with each other in front of, you know, the writers and producers of the show. And we'll have just like a large, it's usually like some presentations and then several long, hours long conversations around like how we can make this information break it down enough for a child to understand and like, and the best way to approach it, the best way to teach it, things to be careful of, like that kind of thing. And so we take all of that and then go into writers' meetings to then sort of like, develop what the ideas are. Or sometimes the producers will already have sort of very clear ideas of things that they want to, of the ways in which they want to tackle these topics. And then also because we are a topic-based show, it'll be, this is a joke that, all the writers love, where it's like, okay, so we're going to do racial justice. And, this episode is also about bubbles. Go. It's like, okay, cool. How I can address racial justice and bubbles. I mean, and that's, I'm joking, but also I'm very serious. It's kind of what it's like. And so, you know, so then, you know, like we'll go and, you know, get the story ideas nailed down. And then those go through several rounds of review and the script go through just a million rounds of review. And then those scripts are taken out and tested by the research department. Which is like, I mean, now I feel like they're two separate departments, but they used to, it used to just be a branch of the curriculum, but now it's like its own separate department of, where they take it out to kids and schools, to try and make sure before we shoot it, to make sure that the messages we want to get across are coming across, that they're coming across clearly, like what the kids are into, what they're not into, what they understand. And then they, take all that feedback back. And then there's like another draft of the script. So it's like, and a lot of times like it's like such an intense process, but it also is really good because, you know, like, or what I've learned, you know, through the years is like, it sometimes can be just as simple as like a change of words where it's like, if you don't, if the, like the way you say something, like the, it confuses the kid and then you lose them. And it's like, if you just say it like this, then we don't have that problem. You know, it's so like, that's what the research department figures out for you. Where it's like, you know, yeah, like you said, you know, basketball instead of ball. I mean, not that. And like basketball for some reason with the visual was confusing. But if you just say ball and show the ball, then they get it and we move on. And that actually wasn't the point of the episode. So let's just make that quick tweak so that we don't lose the kids there, you know, like, So yeah. And so then after that, you know, like all of those notes go into the script, it is revised again. And then that's what we sort of take to shoot. And then after we shoot, I think we test again, to just sort of like see what the feedback is. On the final episode. Yeah, it's
like a focus group kind of test or
yeah just to make sure that what we thought we were trying to get across we got across and or didn't, you know, in some cases.
Yeah,
it's really
so
intense.
By the time it gets to us, it's a very vetted process. It's been through a lot of different
Yes, I mean, and that honestly, you know, like that still doesn't mean that we're gonna get it right or that we always get it right, honestly. And so it is, you know, a very, and that also, you know, even though it is a very thorough process and I appreciate why it's necessary, it can also be frustrating in a lot of ways because, you know, it feels like there's a, you know, a 25 million people that your script has to go through.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, that's just for any writer, frustrating, you know, to be like, okay, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you get to pick which characters? I mean, are you always like, all right, so Cookie Monster is definitely going to be in this Bubbles segment? And, or are people like, you don't get Cookie Monster this week. This week you get Gonger.
You get to choose. I mean, you get to choose. A lot of times the stories will sort of tell you which character it should be, you know. But also, you know, and there are sort of like, you know, and this is like more in the like producing where it's like which performers have like, are guaranteed a certain number of, you know, like whatever that is. So they're like some characters that are basically like Elmo's in every show, you know, like there's always probably Elmo in the show somewhere. But for the most part, you get to be like, oh, I want to do this story. And I think, you know, Big Bird and Oscar would be good for it kind of deal. And then there's, I mean, like maybe sometimes with the humans, they'll be like, you know, let's trade out this human for this human. But with the characters, the story usually tells you which character it should be.
Yeah, that's cool because they have such like, I guess that's like a great thing in just writing in general is like you have these characters with these really specific and strong wants and character traits and you kind of just plug them in and I don't know. Yeah, I don't consider myself a writer, but is that, I don't know, maybe I'm oversimplifying it.
Well, it feels like you're like, you know, like this is such a Cookie Monster story. You know what I mean? Or like,
yeah, or like he, you know, it would be a lot of fun. This story would be a lot of fun with this character.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, my impression is like there's like almost two schools of writing and this is probably wrong. I'm about to make a very large generalization. Amazing. That's probably definitely wrong.
We love
so
it.
Here we go.
Love it.
But I feel like, you know, it's, there's the like, here's, you have a character and let's follow them. And then there's the like, what's the story? Here's the outline. How do you like design the story in a way to, you know, that's to where, you know, like A plus B equals C kind of deal.
Yeah. And I don't think you're going out on a limb at all by making, by saying that. Okay.
I mean, honestly, I think those things can also play together, you know. But yeah, I think for the most part, it is always like, you know, if I'm trying to think of like a thing that I've done recently, and or not, like there was a show I did a while ago about Big Bird being scared to sing, I think it was. I should probably definitely remember, but I don't. But it was like, there's not many timid characters on Sesame. You know what I mean? So it's like, who'd be nervous, you know, about doing something? It's like Big Bird would be nervous about doing something, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So also, Jerry, we wanted to talk to you about perfectionism, hence the name of our podcast. So firstly, broad question, do you consider yourself a perfectionist?
I'm going to say yes, though I don't think that I'm a sort of like type A person by any means, which I think is what I think of when you say someone who's a perfectionist. But I definitely always have very strong opinions about how things should be.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah.
Which I think is like ultimately what that is, where it's like, nope, that's wrong, 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 until it's right.
I think that's the most accurate definition of perfectionism, is I have strong opinions about the way things should be. Yeah. And that's how I'm going to describe it to people from now on.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think of myself as like someone who has like, you know, everything planned out or by any, you know what I mean, where it's like, oh, we have to be here by, you know, like, I'm definitely a wanderer by trade and spirit. but I definitely... yeah, have very strong opinions about when things are right and when they're not right.
Yeah, and how does that come up in your work? Do you ever get pushback, or like how do you navigate that?
you know, like with writing both, actually, writing for the show and the like games and stuff. Again, I always have pretty strong feelings about how things should be. For the most part, I will express those feelings up to a point. And then I will always, because as I was saying earlier, you know, like Sesame is an institution that belongs to many people. And so I will just always sort of be like, this isn't mine. At the end of the day, this isn't mine. So, you know, like I've expressed what I think, you know, like you pay me to think things. This is what I think. You can either use that or not, you know, like it's your job, I guess, to decide whose opinions to use, and my job to have the opinions. So this is what I think. So yeah, that's usually my general way of handling it, is like I'll have very clear, and I think that I've learned through Sesame that I'm very grateful for, in terms of just, you know, being a creative professional, is being able to explain why I think things are like, why is this right? Why is this wrong? You know, like, and being able to explain it specifically, where it's like, yeah, even if it sometimes sounds a little silly, where I'm like, this is too Cinderella-y, you know, or this is too, you know, like, just getting where, like, there's something, this aspect of it, you know, like, the fact that you made that there makes it feel, you know, like Cinderella, like that, and that's why it's wrong. Like, being able to articulate, you know, sort of what, those nuances, and when you're trying to create something. And when something feels right or when it feels wrong. So I'm really grateful to get to practice in that language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think being able to articulate, like, that's how I think about improv. I'm still like pretty enmeshed in that world. And a comedy, just all comedy since I was a kid, just being like, oh man, that was really funny. Why?
Mm-hmm.
And then thinking about it and then working it out until I have like a framework. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And of I think, like, why it works so well.
Yeah.
Or why it didn't. I usually learn better when things are bad. So I was like, oh, that was bad. And I can sort of take apart why. Easier. Yeah. It's harder when things are good, you know, to be like, oh, it was so good. Why? You know, like.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And though I will say, my general thought is like, things are usually good and you have good performers, honestly. Like, you can, I was just saying this actually to Andy. Why were we talking about this? I'm talking about actors. Anyhow, I'm a big, you know, I have so much love and respect for amazing actors and performers. And I really, truly, it's like, they are worth that money. I mean, like, maybe not $10 million, but whatever, like, they're worth money. Because it's like, you really can, like, you can put them, if you have a good actor, you can put them on a garbage bag, in a garbage bag, in a black box theater, and it can still be Shakespeare. You know, like,
yeah.
You have a really good performer, you know, like, and so, that's usually what makes things good. And like, everything else can make it bad. But if you have a strong performer, then
That's interesting. I guess I was wondering if, as a writer, do you ever feel the need to direct as well, to kind of say, like, you got to say it like this? Or like, do you feel any sort of like control about that? I feel like I would.
Sometimes I do. It depends on, I guess, who I'm writing for, honestly. Like, sometimes I do have very clear ideas of it, and I do want to direct and want to get more into directing, honestly. Because I've, you know, I will have very, again, strong feelings and clear ideas about how this is supposed to, you know, like, what's right and what's wrong, and like, how I want it to come across. But then I also really enjoy, again, because I like love and respect performers so much, like, you know, just like having an idea, writing it out loosely, and then being like, you take it. Like, I can't wait to see what you do with it, you know, like, that's super fun for me too. And like, and trying to write to the, for the performer in that way, where it's like, you know, like, I'm just going to leave this loose so that you sort of have room to play. Andy and I, made a short film a couple, years ago, with one of my oldest friends, George Basil, and we, we had him, Andy wrote it to, and also had the brilliant idea to cast George in all of the roles.
Yeah,
so he was always playing against himself. Yeah, a short film we made called Peanut, and it literally was like, it's like such a loose and sort of like ridiculous premise of a short, and it, the whole thing was just like, okay, go, George. Just, here's the idea. Now go, like, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Well,
that sounds really fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
When you have faith in somebody like that,
yeah,
sounds like you just like can't wait to get to work, and it's like, we're gonna have a blast today. That's awesome.
I was gonna say, it was hard for him to because he was like playing against himself, and the whole time we're like, everyone's like laughing, and it's like, how is he then gonna like match the others? That it was like, you know, it is good to cast other actors.
you're trying to cast more than one.
But it was a lot of fun.
We also wanted to talk to you about On Writing, a podcast of the Writers Guild of America East. You host seasons 7 through 10.
Oh, is it that many? That many seasons? Awesome.
And I listened to one yesterday when you interviewed the writer for Promising Young Woman.
Oh, Emerald Fennell. Emerald Fennell,
yes.
Something like that, I think.
Yes. And it was such a fantastic interview. I really enjoyed that movie, so I picked that one, and it was just really fascinating to see. I mean, to hear her talk about the process and, you know, all the themes within it. And I thought you did a great job as a host.
Thank you.
And as a new podcast host, I have a lot of respect for people who have successful podcasts. How did you get involved with On Writing?
So I've been in the guild since I, you know, started writing at Sesame. And I started getting more involved with the guild, maybe like 5 years ago. I started going with them to lobby to lobby in Albany to pass a diversity tax credit along with the film and television tax credit that's you know, like, for like the city of New York, or for the state of New York rather. I started going with them. I went maybe with them 2-3 years. They've been doing it for longer than that, had been petitioning to get this diversity incentive included in the film and tax credit. film and TV tax credit. It did finally pass, actually, a couple years ago. I think maybe this is the first year where it's like able to be implemented. I actually, please double check all this information. I'm not entirely sure, but this is how I understand it.
Google it, people.
But anyhow, so I started getting, you know, sort of more involved because I'm the first Black woman to write for Sesame Street. And so it was like one of the like bombs we would drop in the room because, you know, like, you know, the tax credit was to try to incentivize TV and film productions to hire women and people of color in writing and directing positions. So put a sort of a financial incentive at the point of hire to really try and, cause you know, like, you know, not that TV and film is hard to break in well enough, but then also it was always sort of like an old boys club and certain social circles that have access to these jobs, and to the entry of these jobs. And so it was really trying to, create an actual incentive for people to seek new voices. And so, so I went with them a couple times to lobby for that. And because it was like, you know, it was the bomb because everyone's like, you think of Sesame Street and it's like, oh, that's historically the most diverse show on television. And it's like, it sure was in front of the camera. Like, but it's a very different story behind the camera. Wow. And so, I mean, this is not to you know, call anybody out or like, you know, but it, you know, historically, you know, it was not as diverse behind the camera and that it was still an issue for the show, like just me, just however many years ago, being the first Black woman to write for the show.
Yeah, that is surprising.
Yeah. And everyone would be like, oh, and it's like, see, it really is an issue. Yeah. A show like Sesame Street needs to, you know, sort of like broaden its, you know, voices in that way. And so, so because of that, I started, doing more stuff with the Guild, getting more involved. And so ended up, you know, meeting Jason Gordon, who's the director of communications there. And actually the old host of the podcast was Caitlin Fontana, who's also a friend from, and former Magnet performer. But then she moved to California. And so I think it was just sort of like, maybe she recommended me. I don't know if she did actually. Anyhow, Jason was like, is this something you would be interested in doing? And I was like, yes. Yes, but then, and it still is. But then, I think that actually the reasons why I've hosted season 7 through 10 is that Jason's really trying to hold out for me to, get to do these interviews in person. It's always like, it'd be so cool to get to meet all these writers. And then like immediately the pandemic started and it was like, oh, I'm not actually, ugh. I mean, like, you know, you meet them over Zoom, but it's not the same, you know? And so he's like, let's do another season. And like, maybe we'll get back to a point where you can like meet these people in person. But yeah. And it's been incredible. It's been a lot of fun.
So then you'd go to like a recording booth, right? The whole thing?
Well, no, I think that they were doing the records at the Guild. So I would just go to the Guild offices and they would. And to be honest, though, the thing that is good about doing it over Zoom is that then you have access to more people, like people who are in LA or other places. So they maybe wouldn't have said yes to the podcast otherwise because they weren't in New York. But now it's like, you know, we can talk to Emerald Fennell, who's in London, you know, like.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun.
That's amazing. Do you have any advice for us? being a host of a podcast? Anything you learned? Is this your first time hosting a podcast?
Yes, it definitely it is. My first time hosting a podcast. I still feel brand new at it. It's funny to hear this. Like, oh, I've technically done it for 3 seasons. Like, I mean, I guess it's maybe been 2 years. I don't know.
I know, but time is a blur.
Such a blur. Yeah, I still feel really brand new at it. I still feel nervous every time and, you know, like, want to make sure that I do my due diligence and sound smart. That's always my biggest fear, where I'm like, oh, I'm probably pronouncing this all wrong, or I'm like trying to make a reference that I don't understand, you know, like,
me too. That's my biggest fear. I'm always making references I don't understand. Can I be honest? Yeah. I've never seen My Dinner with Andre. I've never saw that movie.
It worked.
But you got a great voice. I'm just so soothed. I'm like, yeah, this person knows what she's talking about.
Really?
I'm on board. Yeah.
Thank you. That's incredible to hear. Yeah, because I do still feel still on some afterwards. I'll be like, I wish I'd said this, or I wish I'd said, you know, like, I wish I'd asked this, or I wish I'd, you know, like, But it has gotten a little bit easier. And you know, some interviews feel easier than others. Like the things that I've like already watched anyway. You know, like I got to, then it's right. Like, yeah, cool. Have that person on. I already love this show. I've already watched all of it versus the things that it's like, yeah. I have to binge, you know, or like catch yeah, up yeah. on, or it's sure. Like we just actually did one, the other day, which was lovely to be fair. Like, but it was for a horror film and I don't watch horror films. I don't like horror films.
Yeah. I don't like to be tricky. Scared.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, initially, but the woman was lovely. It was still a great interview. And like, you know, it was a great film. And so it was just sort of like still fun to talk about. But
did you end up watching the film or did you kind of like read the plot summary?
Yeah, no. I mean, I did read the plot summary first. Whenever I am scared to watch something, I'll always read the plot summary first to just try and prime myself for like what it's going to be.
Yes.
But I did watch it. I'm also, in terms of advice, like and sometimes Jason will be like, it's fine. You don't need to do that. I'm like, no. I always want to be as prepared as I possibly can be. So I do.
Sure.
In fact, the last interview that I did was with Bruce Miller and Yao Lin Chang for Handmaid's Tale. And I had not watched Handmaid's Tale because it's stressful as hell. And so, but it was like, well, there's no way I'm interviewing these people and not having. So I watched the pilot and then I binged the current season because it was like, that's the least amount that I can do. I was going to try and bench the entire series, but it was like, honestly, it was like one of those things where it's like, I only got like 4 days notice or something. And so it was like, okay, well, I'll binge the current season, because I always want to have watched. And then I still will also try and like, I'll read the Wikipedias of the writers if they have, I'll do digging around to other interviews that they've given, just trying to find as much information as I can about the person and the project as possible. Because I feel like it's the least that I can do to sort of like be prepared for the conversation, because it feels like it would be rude otherwise. You know, right. Like especially when it's someone like,
I can understand.
You know, like when it's someone who's had like a very long career, you know, like I'll try and like Tony Kushner, I got to interview and I hadn't watched Angels in America. And that's not what I was interviewing him about, West Side Story. But I was like, I feel like I have to watch Angels in America. I'm going to talk to Tony Kushner. I need to watch Angels in America. Like, yeah. And so it's like that kind of thing. Where it's like, again, Jason was like, you don't need to do that. It's like, no, I think I do. Like, I don't want to talk to this man and have not seen his like, you know, like
the thing most recognized work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like I always just try to be as prepared as I possibly can be. Then also, you know, like, I mean, I really... You know, I'm a chatty Kathy, as you can tell.
That's great for
us. But also, I like...
Yeah, that's great. Makes for a great guest. Really, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I really love talking with people about, like... I love listening to people talk about things that they're passionate about.
Sure.
And yes.
Honestly, that could be anything. Yes. That could be, like, you know, truck driving. But if someone's, like, really passionate and can, like, explain to me the ins and outs of truck driving, like, I'm fascinated.
Yes.
So yeah, I am always just like very genuinely interested in talking with people.
Yeah. That's a good thing to be. As an interviewer. And as a person, right?
And as a person.
As a person walking around.
Convenient as an interviewer.
Yeah. That's the thing I learned from this podcast. Like, oh, I like listening to people.
Yes.
I like it when people are like psyched about the thing they do. I like to learn about it.
It is. To hear someone talk about something that they're passionate about, it's like you kind of like witness them lighting up. It's like a beautiful human experience, you know?
Yeah.
I find it fascinating as well.
And especially because, you know, like I get to talk with writers about writing and you know, like writing is such a struggle.
You know, like it's such
It's such a hard thing to do. And so it's always very like encouraging to talk with other writers and inspiring to, you know, sort of just hear about other people's process and the struggles that they saw. Like Tony Kushner was like, again, who's like, has been like awarded like the President's Medal or like something insane. And he even still was like, you know, he was like, every time I sit down, I'm like, whew, I don't know. And I'm like, really?
That's like, it's very encouraging to hear.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it's also upsetting to be like, wow, it's just never going to go away. It's just insecurity.
I guess that's
I'm just going to remain insecure. Yeah. But also, yeah, it is inspiring cool. and encouraging to be like, even like, you know, like these people who, you know, are sort of the most decorated feel that stress and anxiety of trying to, you know, because it's hard. It's really hard. And it's also can be fun and, you know, like, and all those things and getting to express yourself and create characters and worlds and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, it's also very hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Writing is so hard.
It
writing
really
used to stress me out so much. We were on a sketch team together, Ellen. I was telling you before, Jerry and I were on a sketch team. I don't know what your experience personally was as a writer, but I was so stressed out always. just trying to come up with an idea.
Yeah.
Bringing it to the table, having it like not land at all. Like people don't get what you're trying to say. You're like, no, that's not the joke.
No.
The joke is this thing. And they're like, but that's not funny. And you're like, but you got to see it from this yeah. different, you know, and then, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do I remember? I mean, I also sort of remember feeling stressed. One about like just having to, which was, you know, like a part of the good thing that I was trying to practice in that moment where it's like, you know, when you have a deadline, you like have to produce something. So that was stressful just in and of itself. But then also, yes, like bringing things to the table and then having them not land or work or whatever, or like, or having things not picked for the show. Like, that sort of like always felt like a comment on your character where it's like, oh, well, I guess I'm an awful person. And it's like, no, I just didn't get anything in the show. It's fine. but it was, you know, like, you know, like in that. You feel so vulnerable because you're, you know, trying to be creative with it becomes a group of friends, but at times can feel like a group of strangers and like, and wanting to feel like you are heard and understood. And I think, you know, a part of that also, what I took as practice was, getting better at giving feedback because not everyone's great at giving feedback.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I learned that through that process of like being like, you know, and because I think everyone was feeling insecure too, it was like, that sometimes everyone wasn't trying to be good at giving feedback. They were just trying to get their thing made.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I think it really takes, and maybe it's like, the group of people and or the group of people being together for a certain period of time where like everyone gets comfortable. Because I do feel like there was a point where that we got to where it's like everyone feels comfortable. We are all trying to uplift each other's ideas and like we all just want this to be the best thing. So like, you know, you sort of can give feedback from a healthier place.
That's such an interesting part of like the writing room process that like I didn't think about is the feedback portion, right? Because I'm like, oh, you're in a writer's room, you're writing all the time and pitching, but you have to give feedback to other people, and I feel like, you know, when I think of feedback, I think of like corporate feedback for my performance review, and I've been trying to focus very hard on. This is not me. This is not like an assessment of Ellen, the person. Mm-hmm. This is outside of me. This is a body of work that lives outside of me and is not indicative of my character. but that's very hard to do.
Yeah.
It's very hard to do.
It's a skill like you're, to acquire.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Both
to
ways.
To be able to separate
too,
yourself
think.
In a way.
Yeah.
It's tricky. I mean, you know, because you do also want to like have pride and take ownership in what you're doing. But also depending on what it is, like if you're making something for somebody, for a company, what I've learned is that the best, and this might not be, now that I'm saying it, this might not be the best way to approach it, but the way to approach it that works for me is to just remember that it's not mine at the end of the day. You know, like they are paying me to make the thing that they would like.
Yeah.
And so, okay, you're paying me to use my fingers to make the thing that you would like. And there's a good, you know, like, depending on who the client is, it's like, they might not know what they would like. And so that can get very frustrating. But ultimately, they're still paying me to make the thing that they would like. Not the thing that I would like, the thing that they would like.
Yeah.
There are times when I'm paid to make the thing that I would like. Actually, are there? Actually, I'm waiting for that moment. I'm waiting to get to make the things that I would like. Yeah. It's a different. It's a different thing.
It's also interesting, Jerry, when you mentioned that sometimes you work with your partner and that can be tricky, and it's so true, because I feel like, you know, somebody like an acquaintance could give me feedback, and then like my boyfriend or my family member could give me the same feedback, and I would hear it so differently. You know, I'd be like, what are you talking about? And then someone else could say the same thing, and I'm like, that's an interesting point. Okay. There's just something so charged there.
How could you say that to me?
And I don't know, like, what is that? I don't know if that's like, and maybe it's because they know you so well, and so it feels like...
And you know them so well, so you're, like, making a lot of assumptions, I think. I don't know.
Or it's, like, it's too personal. Because, it's so hard to sort of not take notes personally, and so when they're coming from a person who knows you very intimately, it feels, like, double personal. Yeah, it's tricky. Again, it's taken us a very long time to figure out how to work well together. And we still, we'll hit some bumps, but, like, for the most part, we've gotten to a really good place where, I think we both just appreciate that, like, this is not ours. I don't know what it is. Yeah. My job is to just try and help you create the best work that you can make. And so I'm going to use what I understand about you and your creative process to, with Andy a lot, I ask him a lot of questions where it's like, do you think this, how would it feel if you did this, or rather than being like, sometimes I'll give him very direct notes where it's like, I think you should cut this or go here, do whatever. But like, if when he asks for those, but otherwise I just like to ask a lot of questions.
It is really cool that you collaborate together and that you're so supportive of each other, because it's not a given that just because you're both creative people or writers that you are going to work together, you decided to do that. Because you like each other's stuff,
Especially because
I think that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. It is because our aesthetics are very different. Again, like he has a very dark sense of humor. I don't know if you've seen any of this stuff. And I have a very healthy sense of humor. So I appreciate his dark sense of humor, but it's like not my aesthetic. I appreciate it, but I don't know that whatever. Maybe sometimes I can get dark about things. I'm more goofy than dark. He's very dark. I'm very silly. And so, it can be tricky because we have very different aesthetics, but that
sounds like a cool, nice, good combo.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great combo. I think so. Dark and silly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's like, we'll be like laughing and then he'll say something really dark and I'm like, ugh, you just had to go left. Okay. That's the end of the joke. That was dark. But it's good. It is. It's good.
Yeah.
My partner and I, who make things together, actually made a video called The Perfect Couple's Guide.
Yeah. Amazing.
And it's a series of three sketches that are basically jokes on our relationship that are grounded in a lot of truth. Essentially it's us trying to tell other people why we're so perfect as a
That's
couple
amazing.
And how they can be perfect too.
For our listeners, what's the secret? What's the secret for those in relationships or seeking relationships?
Basically, I think it's that I'm always right.
That makes it easy.
You heard it here, folks. That must be so funny if you argue about the sketch about being the perfect couple. If you're like, no, it needs to be this.
Which we definitely did. We definitely got in a fight, I think, making the first one. Because it was like we were shooting. I think it started out as a bit. We were shooting something else. And it was like one of those things where Andy had the idea and was like, oh, let's do that too. We like already had lights set up or something. He's like, oh, let's do this. And I was like tired and hungry. And I was like, whatever. Come on. You know, like not feel like not wanting to do it in that moment. But then I liked the way it turned out so much, so that we kept doing them. But yeah, we definitely got into some fights.
I think our listeners would be very interested in finding out how to be a perfect couple from a perfect couple.
Mm-hmm. From a perfect couple. So any other rules besides you are always right? Anything? Any other guides?
No, I think that's it.
That's it. There you go. There you go. I think that goes pick your battles, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess it's about sort of trying to listen and appreciate what your spouse is trying to say, but really it's I'm always right.
yeah. Great. Yeah. Well, we'll check that out.
Yeah, watch the videos. You'll see.
We'll see.
Watch the videos, everyone. Dennis, any relationship advice you want to give? I'm thinking if I have any.
Go to couples therapy if you're serious about each other.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Because even if you think that you're communicating well, you could probably be doing better at it. And that's what we are learning. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Communication is.
That's true and great advice. Yeah.
That is fantastic advice. My advice would be to really learn each other's values. Another way of saying that is like learning your partner's love language, because something that might not seem like a big deal to you could be a very big deal to them. So honoring that and not just saying like, I don't want to go to that movie. It's like not that big of a deal. And if they're like, I love this.
Actually, quality time is my love language. And so we need to do something together. It's like learning their love language and then not being mad at them about it.
Yes, that is a very important qualifier, to not resent that either, to truly honor it and in a genuine way. Yeah. Look at us teaching people how to be perfect.
We're so well adjusted. We're crushing it.
You're welcome. You know what? You're welcome.
And thank
listeners,
you.
Listeners,
you're welcome.
This has been three perfect people
in perfect relationships.
Perfect relationships.
Absolutely no bumps in these roads.
Smooth sailing.
What's a fight? I've never heard of that.
Well, I think it's about time for us to wrap up, right,
Helen? Oh, wow. Yes. Okay, yeah.
I know. Didn't that go fast?
That was so quick. Yes, this was so much fun, guys.
I know.
Yeah, this was. Thanks
great
so
job
much
hosting a podcast. You're already doing great.
Thank you so much.
As long
much
as we don't lose the audio, which we've done a couple times, it'll be great.
Which we've done a couple times, but we're learning.
We're learning.
That's why we're doing the backups. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, copy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Now we double up always.
Yeah.
But Jerry, thank you so much for joining us and for taking the time to talk with us. Is there anything you'd like to plug, anything coming up for you that we should look out for?
I mean, I guess the podcast we've got.
Yes.
I keep forgetting, actually. I'm so bad at promotion. Like, I don't even post it on my social. I'm not a big social media user, which I like keep trying. Mm-hmm. Kicking myself.
You're better off.
It's one of those things.
You're better off.
It feels like you like need to have a presence, you know, everywhere. And it's like, I don't care.
Right.
I don't have time for it. it's like, I don't know. I have a hard time, or I'm bad at promoting the podcast, but I would say, listen up for new episodes of the podcast. We just did a film called Master that's coming out. That was the horror film where we talk with Mariama Diallo, a new film that she's a new filmmaker as well. That was super fun. And we've got more episodes of the podcast coming out. And so I would urge folks to listen to those, because I enjoy making them, and I hope people enjoy listening to them.
On Writing, a podcast of the Writers Guild of America East. Subscribe to that one.
Yes.
Well, thank you again, Jerry. This is so lovely. It was so nice to see you. I haven't seen you so long.
I know. I assumed you still lived in PLG. I really was like, I'm assuming I would run into you, but clearly you
don't. Yeah, that was like four years ago. Maybe we still will run into each other. It's a small world. Well, that's it for this week. Follow us on Instagram at Pursuit of Perfectness. Write us an email at pursuitofperfectness@gmail.com. And if you like what you heard, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe. Tell your friends. Thank you to Keith Burgon for our theme music. And until next time, be a little less hard on yourself. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.